Good morning. It is April the 28th, Tuesday, and we're here today to get additional information on early learning in particular. So Megan will be joining us, and Rob, you're joining us as well. That'll be good. I hope that my fellow senators will be coming along. If I look kind of like I can't hear you, that's probably because I can't. I found out yesterday I have an ear infection, and Dr. Bates it's kind of nice having a doctor in the Senate. I know people like to have a doctor in the House, but we have two in the Senate. And Doc Bates stuck his little thing in and looked in there and said that I had a pretty serious ear infection. That's why I'm having trouble hearing sometimes. My eardrum clicks in and out. Sometimes it'll click and I can hear fine, and then it's plugged again. So anyway, if I look like I'm not hearing you well, that's probably because I'm not. With that, Mr. Wilson?
Members of subcommittee, Mr. Chair, the next 3 days will be early learning. Today with a concentration on the hubs. Tomorrow will be more of a concentration on other investment proposals and some of the programs. And Thursday we'll be spending more time on child care, some of the changes at the federal level, and the impact of that on the budget for the federal funds that flow through the state. And then next week, a couple more days on Department of Education issues around assessments and probably on other local or other policy packages that they have in their budget. Keep in mind, this is sort of starting phase two, where you dive deeper into the details of whether it's the governor's proposed budget or alternatives to it or whatever. So this is setting up. What you learn today will go far into sort of getting what you think needs to be done during work session. So with that, Mr. Chair.
And 2 weeks from Thursday is the revenue forecast day. We're all awaiting that. Hopefully it'll be positive. And then we'll all be scrambling as to how to spend all that extra money.
I thought you were going to announce what day is Mother's Day.
What day is Mother's Day?
I really don't know. I was hoping you'd know. The 10th? Thank you.
A week from Sunday, maybe?
Yes.
That sounds right. Okay. Megan?
Morning. Co-chairs Monroe and Comp, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Megan Irwin, and I'm the acting early learning system director. And I'm really looking forward to getting to spend the next 3 days with you talking in more detail about the early learning division's work and the early learning budget requests. I'm here today to provide more detail regarding early learning hubs. And as part of my presentation,
Madam Co-Chair?
Yes. Megan, you caught me with the word that you just said. You said you were acting.
Madam Co-Chair, that's correct. I'm the acting early learning system
and
director.
So can you give us information whether you're coming or going or staying?
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, I hope I'm staying. I'm committed to this job for as long as folks will have me.
Thank you.
Well, Madam Co-Chair, for what it's worth, I met with the governor yesterday, and I told her that I thanked her for keeping Megan and Nancy and Rob. I says, even though you got to replace Rob, I said, I think you've got a great team, and they're working well together, and so we hope Megan continues to be a part of that team.
Yes, she just caught me off guard when she said she was acting leader, and I thought, oh no, don't tell us you're going to leave us, so thank you for staying.
You're welcome, and thank you. So today I'm here to provide more detail regarding the early learning hubs. And as part of my presentation, I've actually brought a couple members of the community with me. So Zeke Smith from Early Learning Multnomah and Early Learning Washington County, and Sue Miller from Early Learning Hub Inc. are going to be joining us in just a little bit. Because as you consider what to invest in the hubs in the next biennium, I think it's really important for you to have the chance to understand the work that they do on the ground, what they're responsible to the state for achieving. And then I'm going to talk to you after they have the chance to share their work about how we would actually allocate additional resources for the hubs if we received them. So providing you all that information is our goal today. First, I'm going to do a little bit of framing for you around hub responsibilities. Second, you'll hear from the members of the community we've brought with you. And then finally, I'm going to talk through how we would allocate additional resources, the metrics that the hubs are responsible for, and look at a couple of budget scenarios. So to tee things up for my partners, I want to just frame things for you a little bit, starting with why hubs were created. And you've heard me say all of these things before in round one and in other committees you sit on. But as you know, supporting young children and their families to learn and to thrive early in life is critical for later success in school. And that often the services and supports that help us do that are delivered in isolation, and we've really lacked in this state a system for service delivery. So early learning hubs were created to make resources and supports more available, more accessible, and more effective for children and families who have historically been overrepresented in the achievement gap. And they're really tasked with working with the state, working with my office and the Early Learning Council to build a more cohesive early learning system out of our more traditional patchwork of programs and services. So House Bill 2013, which passed in the 2013 legislative session, gave the council and the division the authority to establish early learning hub demonstration projects. We were permitted to establish no more than 16, and they had to be established in a staged way. The legislation actually required that we launched no more than 7 in the first year of the biennium, and then up to 9 more in the second year, which is why you've seen the staged rollout that you've seen for the hubs. And we were appropriated $4 million to do that work. The statute that created the hubs also laid out some basic requirements for them, including governance and who had to participate in hub governance, a 15% cap on administrative overhead, and then directions to the Early Learning Council to establish metrics. And later in my presentation, we're going to go through those metrics in detail.
Okay, thank you. And Megan, you just basically answered my question, but I would be very interested in, like, if you're going to break down the amount of money that's been used in the regional Marion County hub compared to somebody that's just starting up, and how did the implementation flow, and then how did the dollars flow with it?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, we'll talk a little bit more later in the presentation around some budget scenarios, but to answer your question, this biennium, every hub, regardless of when they started, received $50,000 in startup funding, and then a per child allocation of $15 per child in their coverage area. And everybody received their allocation regardless of when they started. So we have some hubs who received a year's worth of funding to spend in 6 months because of the staged rollout. When we get into the next biennium, it'll be much cleaner because we'll be allocating it from the start.
Thank you.
Okay. So just to briefly remind you what the hubs are responsible for, so you can be thinking about this when you're listening to Zeke and Sue talk in just a minute. They have 4 core responsibilities, and you can see them here on the screen. You've heard them before. Identifying the population of children at risk, identifying the specific needs of those children and families, working across sectors and across partnerships to connect them to services and supports, and then accounting for outcomes collectively across the system. And I just want to re-highlight a point that I made in round one of this conversation with your committee, which is that one of the main reasons that we need a locally based coordinator for early learning services is that our system to date, again, has really been a loose collection of programs and services. Some are public. Some, like childcare, are predominantly private businesses. Most that are state funded have really specific eligibility requirements, and almost all programs have really long waiting lists. And so that presents some problems in accomplishing number 2 and number 3 of the hub responsibilities. And so, of course, hubs don't solve all of those problems, But they do take us a long way toward finding solutions because they have the power to hone in on challenges and problems locally, convene partners around local problem solving, and then push for and help resource innovations and connections. And they're also able to surface local challenges that need the state to lean in on problem solving to my office in a way that I don't think we would be able to discover if we didn't have local folks convening around early learning in the way that the hubs are. So over the last year, over the last year, as you know, 16 hub regions have been locally developed across the state. It's been a staged rollout. This map, which you've seen before, shows you where they are. We're currently still working with the regions in the salmon color to get them to the place where we can execute a contract with them. We're very close, Representative Huffman and Senator Roblin, with both of those regions. They've done phenomenal work, and I anticipate moving to contract with them in the next month or so. One last piece of framing that I just wanted to do is it is really interesting how the local system has developed and the organizations and different types of people who have stepped forward to build and lead the hubs. The diversity of fiscal agents and lead organizations is just interesting, and you can see it here. We have a coordinated care organization, a community college, several education service districts, four nonprofits that have stepped up to lead and help us build this system. And I think that that speaks to, again, the level of innovation and local problem solving that we're able to see when you move to this kind of a collective impact model. So with that really pretty basic landscape overview, I'd like to give Zeke and Sue the chance to come up and talk a little bit about their work. I do need to note Mark Mulvihill had planned to join us today. He represents the Blue Mountain Early Learning Hub, which is Umatilla, Morrow, and Union counties. But something came up out in his area, and he wasn't able to make the drive over, which sometimes happens with our rural partners, but he sends his apologies. After you hear from Zeke and Sue, I'll step back up to talk about the metrics that the hubs are accountable for and how we would propose allocating additional resources to them in order to achieve those metrics.
I think your name is up first.
Okay.
And welcome. Identify yourself and let's fire away.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair Monroe and Co-Chair Comp, other committee members. Glad to be here today and have the opportunity to speak before you. My name is Zeke Smith. I'm the Chief Impact Officer for the United Way of the Columbia Willamette in the Portland metropolitan region. In this role, I've had the privilege to act as a co-convener for two of our early learning hubs, as Megan had said, Early Learning Multnomah, which is in partnership with the Department of County Human Services, and Early Learning Washington County, in partnership with the Department of Health and Human Services. At the United Way, we are focused like a laser on breaking the cycle of childhood poverty and are leaning into this challenge with our money, our relationships, and our problem-solving capacity. So I want to share briefly how the early learning hubs have provided a platform for us to engage in this work and how this is visible in what we've been doing. We see our role in convening early learning hubs as a fundamental strategy in tackling the issues of childhood poverty, specifically in those communities where it's most pervasive. When Early Learning Multnomah was formed 9 months ago, we had the opportunity to ask some fundamental questions about early learning supports and services in Multnomah County. What supports and services are offered to families with young children? Who's being served by those efforts? What have families been asking for? Who makes decisions about the supports and services families receive? And are communities of color at the table? The creation of the hub was an opportunity to imagine a true early learning system that is focused on serving communities of color and families living in poverty, communities that our systems have underserved for too long. So I want to share a couple of data points that help in understanding the nature of the challenge and the opportunity in Multnomah County and why we're focusing so significantly on communities of color. So there are roughly 64,500 kids between the ages of 0 to 6 years old in Multnomah County. So of those 64,500, About 26,000 or 40% of them are living in poverty. And for this discussion, the figure we're talking about is those who are in families at 185% of the federal poverty line. So for a typical family of four living at this level in Multnomah County, that means 40% of their total income would likely be consumed by rent each month, leaving dangerous and costly decisions about health care, education, early childhood, and otherwise. So for of that 26,000 kids living at that level or below, 67% of them are kids of color in Multnomah County. So in Multnomah County, for every 10 kids between the ages of 0 and 6 that are living in poverty, 7 of them are kids of color. So these data points have helped shape our focus and how we think about supporting communities of color and begin to tell a story about the historical inequities that are pervasive in our systems of care.
Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't mean to interrupt your flow, but I wondered if you could compare that 70% of kids living in poverty being kids of color versus how they are of kids overall in the county. You see, like, they're 70% of the kids living in poverty
yeah.
versus they're 10% of the kids overall, or they're 90% of the kids overall. Do you see what I'm asking?
You, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Smith Warner. Thank you for the question. Luckily, I have my computer with me, so I can flip to that slide. So overall, the total population of this 26 of these kids, of the total 65,000 that are 0-6, 55% are white and 44% are of color. So you take, you know, I'm looking at a bar graph, 55%, 44%. And it flips significantly when we look just at the kids that are in poverty, at the number that are in that are of color and the number that are white.
Thank you.
So all of those data points, including the ones that that you just identified, have been critical as we think about where we want to focus our work. So to do it, we felt it had been it's really important that we have to bring some specific organizations to the table who are getting the best results in communities of color. So I believe you received testimony from some of our hub partners at the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization, the Native American Youth and Family Center, and Self-Enhancement Incorporated, all culturally specific organizations, as well as from Don Grouting, superintendent at David Douglas School District. These are voices that really reflect many of the others that we've been working with on the in the hub. I point to these testimonials because they're evidence of the ways that our hub have taken the notion of parent and community engagement to heart. And while this aligns with our values in Multnomah County and at the United Way, the hub has really been an ideal mechanism for actualizing this engagement and turning it into new approaches to addressing the needs of the youngest kids and families in our community, particularly for those whom the existing strategies have been the least effective. So what does this look like on the ground? I want to give you an example. We received a grant from the Early Learning Division to support early literacy. Our hub was able to work with four community providers representing Black, Native, Latino, Vietnamese, and Russian communities, and the Multnomah County Library to produce culturally specific and language-appropriate materials, providing families with easy-to-implement tools and strategies for supporting literacy skill development for kids before they enter K-12. On the surface, what this looked like is we have 4,000 families from these communities that have received relevant, appropriate supports that they can use with their families, all built on proven strategies from the library, best practices. On a deeper level, this represents placing the needs and expertise of our communities of color at the center of the solution, ensuring that these materials are not just translated, but are uniquely built on stories, songs, and practices that are known and recognized within each of these specific cultures. So this isn't just about translating Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star into other languages. It's really a story about new tools and tactics in traditionally underserved communities, but also of systems that are changing to recognize our best solutions most often reside within the same communities we're trying to serve, and our hub is dedicated to looking there first. So additionally, the library was really impacted by this process and has subsequently continued to work with culturally specific communities to develop new materials beyond just our early literacy work. I mention this because it's really indicative of the value of this work for an institution which has been eager to engage non-traditional communities in new ways. It's provided a mechanism for them to engage in those
Representative Springer has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Maybe a little bit of a tough question, Zeke. A few years ago when I went back to school, I did a project thesis on parent engagement because the research tells us over and over that that's the key. And what I learned in that process that I spent 18 months participating in and leading is that we can have great ideas, but we can't make people participate. And so what my question is driving to is, what are you seeing as results and how have you overcome some of those obstacles? What I found to be the case, and I went through mountains of research, what I found to be the case is I was preaching to the choir. The parents that I really wanted to reach, the student population where I wanted to change referral rates and absenteeism rates and test scores, were not the ones that committed over a six-month period. It was the ones where the project had zero impact on their referral rate and their absenteeism rate because they were already good or non-existent. So how have you bridged that gap? What have you found that works to bring in some of those families that are struggling just a little bit more? And do you have data yet? And what does that look like?
Co-Chair Monroe and Representative Springer, thanks for the question. So a couple weeks ago, I was at a meeting of our Parent Accountability Council. So we have a council made up of parents from communities of color and staff members from organizations that are working in those communities that support those parents. And they were sharing a set of principles that they've defined for our system, which really guide how they think we should be thinking about how we engage parents and families effectively. And they were having a conversation about how do we share this with different systems in a way that it will make sense. And I was talking to a set of Latino parents who were talking about an experience that they had in they both their kids go to the same school. It's a school that has a high percentage of Latino students and has low achievement scores across the board, and particularly for those kids of color. And they have a new principal this year. And the new principal has kind of a new approach, new ideas about how to engage parents and about some of the changes that they want to make academically to support students. And so the principal said, okay, I'm going to put together a meeting to engage parents, 6 o'clock on a Wednesday, making up the time and date, but generally the idea is the same. And had the meeting, let parents know what kind of change she wanted to see. So these parents who have shown us that they can be engaged, that they have a unique perspective on what's happening with their kids and families, when you provide the right forum for them to engage, were frustrated by the process because neither of them and a lot of the folks that they know could meet at that time because they were working. They had not received the information in a way that they really knew what to do with it. So it wasn't clear to them, is this a meeting that we're supposed to come and provide input? Are they just going to tell us what's happening? So they were telling us how the difference between kind of parent engagement as we've thought about it in kind of or as we've attempted to try to do that with different communities and what they needed to be able to really engage with their kids in their children's experience in school. They really wanted to support their kids. They wanted to understand what these changes were so that they could figure out how they could support them at home. But they needed a mechanism to engage in it differently. So that's, I think, what it looks like sometimes when we really attempt to do parent engagement and we haven't really figured out kind of how we meet communities where they're at. Part of what we're doing in the hub and what we would say is really important is you've got to engage institutions that already are connected with those families, right? So that might be faith-based communities in some places and is. And in our case, it's also culturally specific organizations that we know are working in those communities. So part of what that means then to really engage those parents who otherwise wouldn't show up is you've got to meet them at home. You know, this is, I think, I'm speaking to the choir in many ways. It's about home visiting. It's about engaging them in the environments that they're in. And then it's about giving them the tools, and that's part of what this early literacy process was about, giving them the tools so that they can engage their family and be a part of the process of helping to get to a different set of outcomes. It's too early in the process for us to say, based on these early literacy tools, we know that these are the kinds of outcomes that we've gotten to in terms of change for kids on the ground. But that kind of data measurement is exactly the work that we feel like we're in a good position to do in the hubs. Whether we're talking about K-12 data and the fact that we have to have partnerships with our K-12 schools, whether we're talking about early learning data and the kind of partnerships we're going to need with Head Starts and in that environment, or whether we're talking about our health data and the partnerships we'll need with CCOs to really do what the last part of your question was, how do we focus on a set of outcomes and figure out what progress really looks like. So we're in the process of developing those systems.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Two parts. When do you anticipate having data, because you should know the data. I'm sure you know the data points at this point that you're looking at. So when do you anticipate having a robust enough set of facts to look at that? And I would just suggest inflatables work well. I filled the gym with inflatables, and I told the kids, your ticket to get in to go come play on the inflatables is a parent or an adult in the house that makes decisions for you. And I packed the room once the inflatables went away. People went away too. But inflatables packed the room and got them in there. But when do you anticipate having, and when I say inflatables, I mean slides and stuff like that. When do you anticipate having some data?
Co-Chairs Monroe and Comp, Representative Springer, thank you for the question. So we will have data from our early literacy work or early literacy project in the next couple of months. We're in the process of gathering that data, and we'll be sharing that with the early learning division. So we'll have data specifically about kind of those tools, how they're going out, and then we have some pre and post in terms of what impact that has had for families. The bigger data question is a bit of a more complex question. And so I think, and you'll probably get different responses in different hubs on some level, which is, I think, important for us to think about in the statewide context. So as a system, I think we have some work to do to figure out how we can get the right data points out of the right systems, get them to talk to each other in a way that makes sense, and really say, so what kind of progress are we making across the system? We've had a metrics committee that's been working on that. I'll leave that to Megan to talk about. At the local level, we're in the process of engaging with our partners, the K-12 hubs, the CCOs and otherwise. And I think we want to have a system in place to say, what does progress really look like in this next year? So the first 9 months has really been about how are we building our operating system? How are we kind of putting in place the supports we need to be able to do this with the right resources? I think we'll be in a position moving forward to really to put some more meat to that question of how do we actually have an accountability system and clarity about what data we're capturing.
Thank
and thank you for the advice about the inflatables.
Works wonders.
So our initial work has been, in our initial work, we've been challenged by the lack of quality early learning opportunities for kids of color in particular. So I wanted to give you an example of where we see opportunity for additional resource to be impactful. So quality early learning opportunities have not been available for kids of color in the levels that they need to be. Our current systems, like others outside of early childhood, disproportionately underserve communities of color, and we then see stark reminders of the consequences of this through inequitable resources in kindergarten or results in kindergarten, third grade, beyond. To change this dynamic, in other words, we want to ensure increased opportunities for kids of color and to get access to quality early learning programs, we feel that we need to do two things. We need to support culturally specific organizations with the technical skill development to provide quality early learning programs. And on the flip side, we need to provide existing early learning providers with the cultural understanding to support kids and their families. It's a change process that needs to occur in both places. This will require hiring the right individuals who can navigate both systems and worlds, supporting these individuals in their work, and then developing the right accountability system to hold the right pressure on the change that's needed. We believe that the hub is an ideal place to focus on that because we're going to have to do this work across multiple systems. And the example I gave is an example of what that might look like as we think about changing the way that those systems operate. And with additional resources, we know that we can keep that focus on the work as we need to. So I appreciate your consideration of the early learning hubs. I hope you will affirm the importance of parent, community, and private sector voices through our strong investment in this work. And thank you for your time and for your service. And I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Sue. Go ahead.
All right, thank you. Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, and committee members, my name is Sue Miller. I'm the board chair of the hub serving Marion County, soon to be Marion and Polk counties combined. And I've been in the early childhood world for about two decades, primarily as the founder and director of the Relief Nursery serving Marion and Polk counties. So I am well aware that there are some fabulous programs all over the state that are focused on early childhood. The really innovative part that hubs have provided, in my opinion, is by focusing on learning and education to get these children ready for kindergarten, and secondly, bringing new partners to the traditional early childhood tables, and the new partners are K-12 and healthcare. So now on our board of directors, we have the CEOs of the primary health care providers in our community. We have two superintendents on the board, soon probably to be three or four, and we also have the CEOs of most of the early childhood providers. So they're building relationships, they're learning what each other is doing, and it is making a tremendous difference in how we're providing services to children and families. And I'd like to give you a few specific examples of what we've been doing in Marion County. And I just want to remind you, we are the oldest hub in the state, and we're 1 year old. So remember what one-year-olds can do and what they can't do as you listen to where we are. But we believe that we are already making a difference. So by focusing on early learning, what we did is we had have as our primary strategy targeting elementary school catchment areas. And we initially, about a year and a half ago, we looked at all of the elementary schools in Marion County, and there are 62 of them. And we looked at four criteria to identify the highest need elementary schools. We looked at poverty, as we measured by free and reduced lunch. We looked at diversity, kindergarten assessment scores, and third grade reading scores. Based on those factors, we identified 22 elementary schools that were way below, either high in poverty and diversity, but low in their achievement scores. Because of limited resources, we had to pare that list to 16. So for the last year, we have been focusing on those 16 elementary school catchment areas, working, of course, with the education system from the superintendent to the principal to, very importantly, the kindergarten teachers. And at the same time, we've been looking at all the early childhood providers, the traditional ones, Head Start, Relief Nurseries, OCDC, Oregon Child Development Coalition, and private preschools. And also we now have child care providers at our table, who obviously are a very, very important part of this system. So we have one of the things we've done in these 16 catchment areas is formed basically learning collaboratives for the professionals who are involved in that district. And they meet on a regular basis, either once a month or more frequently, and they've looked at comparing and trying to align their curricula, their assessments, the expectations that they have of children, the fact that a 3- and 4-year-old really is quite a different being from a 5-year-old, and just gaining a greater understanding of each other's profession and also each other's skill set. And what we're finding, besides starting to align curricula, you know, the dream is that these 3- and 4-year-olds get prepared so when they turn 5 and hit kindergarten, they are rolling and successful as defined by the K-12 system, what these children need to be successful. What we're also finding is that these professionals, from child care providers to the preschool to kindergarten, are now gaining respect for one another. They really had never had the opportunity to sit down and, number one, get to know each other and build relationships, but number two, gain a real respect for the fact that they're all doing really important work. So that, believe it or not, it may sound like an obvious, of course you want them to understand each other, but it had not been happening before there was a convening authority and place in our community. And then, Representative Sprenger, your question about family engagement. And yes, I think we can all identify with the fact that we can set up all of these wonderful programs and then hope that the right parents who really can use the support show up. And frequently they haven't. So just as Zeke was commenting, they have a parent advisory council. We also have one of those. And we've relied heavily on that council to advise us on what activities would you recommend that be provided in these 16 elementary school catchment areas. You know, what we're trying to focus on is how do we get the parents to come to the school so they're comfortable bringing their anything from a 0, you know, newborn to that kindergartner, so they are comfortable walking in that front door when their child turns 5. And many of these parents didn't have a great experience in the school system themselves, so it's overcoming and kind of changing those mindsets. And it's interesting because the early childhood system historically has done a really great job at building relationships with parents. You know, anyone who's in early childhood, 0 to 5, you know, you aren't going to have any impact on a child if you don't get the parents engaged. So that's been a real asset and focus for early childhood forever. My perception is it's somewhat of a new perspective for the K-12 system to really find ways to get these parents in the door. So it's been a great cross-fertilization of how do you build those relationships? How do you do the outreach? What are the activities that are going to attract parents into these elementary schools so they bring their children? We provide age-appropriate activities for the children that are literacy-focused while the parents are going to some parent-related activity in the school. So it's really a win-win. And the parent activities are fun, so the parents want to come back. And we usually provide a meal because food attracts everybody. We know that's a common denominator. So those are a few specific examples of what the Hub has been able to trigger in that education system and combining the pre-K with the K-12 professionals. In the healthcare system, which having the healthcare executives at our board meetings has made a tremendous difference. And we really have looked to them to help us figure out how do we get more services to children 0 to 5 and their families so that these kids are healthy when they come through the kindergarten door. One of the specific examples of how this collaboration has made a difference. You may have heard of and be familiar with a developmental screen. It's called the ASQ, Ages and Stages Questionnaire. And it's trying to figure out, does a child have any developmental delay? And you can start at 2 months old. So it's a great predictor. It's a nationally developed and state recognized tool for screening potential delays. Well, parents can administer the screen themselves. Early childhood providers have done this for years. But the key is you need to get the results of those screens into the medical providers so that they then can determine if a referral is needed. And the earlier you identify a delay, obviously, the greater your chances of addressing it. So what our hub has done with the help of the Oregon Health Authority and all the medical healthcare related providers on our board is started figuring out a process, which we hope will be transferable all over the state for other hubs, in how we get the screens that are done by non-medical professions into the medical record for these young children. So then the physician or the nurse practitioner, whomever, can know that the screen's been done. They don't have to duplicate it. Some families tell stories of doing the same screen two or three or four times. Well, we're trying to avoid that duplication, but also really improve the efficiency and the timeliness of getting these referrals so that children can be treated early and once again ready for kindergarten. Another specific example in the healthcare field, you may be familiar with the Reach Out and Read program. It's a wonderful, once again, nationally vetted, state-endorsed model where physicians actually hand books to parents at well baby visits. And the whole idea is the physician is going to say literacy is a very important part of your child's health and upbringing. So we've been able, thanks to state funding, to provide books to clinics all through the county. Before we got started in this program, 5 clinics had the Reach Out and Read program, and now 12 do. We're hoping to expand to all clinics in Marion and now Polk County as well. So exciting things happening, and it takes all of these people at the table to really multiply the impact of these. Looking to the future, if we had more resources, our first priority would be to expand the number of targeted catchment areas that we're able to serve. We only serve 16 in Marion County now out of 62. We're soon going to have 10 more elementary schools when Polk County joins us. So we really, really need to expand the number of schools that we're able to support. We also know that family engagement is one of the most important keys to children being ready for kindergarten, and we would like to expand the number of activities that we're able to do and programs we're able to initiate. Professional development, we have a great beginning at that, but child care providers with the whole QRIS system, we'd like to be able to give them more support. We're also very interested in the whole trauma-informed care and having the educational system really understand that and tie in with the healthcare system. Fourth, we would like to develop a very aggressive community awareness and community engagement program, which takes resources, but we believe can have tremendous impact. And finally, we want to continue our efforts to braid and blend funds. If you look at our budget, you'll see that it's a $1.3 million operating budget for this year. Of that, 25% comes from private funds, from business foundations and healthcare. So we'd like the opportunity to be able to enhance that and do more of the braiding and blending. So those are my comments, and hopefully gives you an overview of what's happening in Marion County with the hub. Thank you very much.
Thanks, sir. Are there questions? Representative Smith-Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Can I just ask, in the most, I admire the fact that you guys are the oldest hub in the system.
Happy birthday.
Yes. And being fully respectful of your internal politics and whatever. But is there any discussion about perhaps once Polk is folded in or when you get to a final thing of adding perhaps more descriptive language to your final name? Right, because I just noticed that all the other ones say Early Learning Multnomah, Blue Mountain, and yours is Early Learning Hub, Inc. So is that kind of waiting to see what your final makeup is, or?
Co-chairs Monroe and Comp and Representative Smith-Warner, yes.
Okay, great. It's just helpful. Yes. You know, it's one of those things that it is really helpful to look at it and know right away, oh, this is the Early Learning Hub from Marion Polk. Or,
right. So. We're great. One of the nonprofit options that Megan listed, and when we first got formed, which actually is about 20 months ago, we put our bylaws together, and at that point, we didn't know if we were going to be Marion Polk, Yamhill, blah, blah, blah. So we said, okay, we'll just be generic, and you're right, it's time to stop being so generic.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm co-chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I can't resist having spent 20 years or more in the Woodburn School District and dealing with a diverse ethnic backgrounds. Just two things that we learned. With many of our parents hadn't ever been to school, so they didn't know what school looked like. So having, unbelievably, for kindergarten and first grade, just a tour of the school so the parents felt comfortable with the actual physical environment. And then the other thing that we learned is that you can reach out to, whether it's the Russian consulate, the Mexican consulate, they are incredible resources for materials. And they will get you materials at a cost, possibly even free. If you have parents that write letters to say, these are some of the materials that we could use with our families, it's just surprising. We had one teacher that had worked in the governmental agencies in Mexico City, and she knew all this stuff, and pretty soon we had all these books everywhere, and they didn't cost us a cent. So, yeah, it's a resource that is out there. And so just for my two cents of a little bit of background, how you might.
Thank you.
Yeah, how you might access some tools that you don't have. Oh, and besides inflatables, if you have movie night once a month, we had two gyms and we had one language going on in one gym and a different language going on in a different gym of movies. And kids love movies, and parents too. Easy stuff that doesn't cost you anything.
Okay. Thank you very much. Megan, what's next?
As if you needed to know all that information.
Thank you, Jason. Okay, so I'm going to bring things home talking about the metrics that the hubs are responsible for and how that fits in with our thinking about resource allocation. I just want to say on the record, thank you to Zeke and Sue. That was wonderful. And a couple of things to just highlight systemically about their work. I hope that what you heard in their presentation was the real focus that the hubs are able to bring around focus population, focus catchment areas, and then that really creative local problem solving that we just can't do from the state level down to communities. And that's really the point behind having local early learning hubs. So now let's talk a little bit about metrics and what they're actually accountable for and what are the outcomes that we're going to be measuring and collecting data on over the course of the next year. So the legislation that created the hubs called for them to be accountable to metrics. In January, the Early Learning Council adopted a set of measures that were developed over the course of 6 months by a group of hub leaders, hub cross-sector partners, and measurement experts. And what the metrics really do for us is lay out our long-term desired outcomes outcomes. If we are successful, what looks different 5 years from now for our focus population of kids? And stages out shorter term 1 to 2 year indicators of success, because moving population level outcomes takes time. It's not the kind of thing where you just flip a switch. And we felt like we needed to chart a course for both of those things. The metrics are all aligned to the core principles you see on the slide here. In the short term, we focused on measures that would create and require different kinds of partnerships on behalf of the children that we're looking to move those population level outcomes for. And you'll also see that one of the principles that we had is that anything that we put forward as a metric has to have a data source, a way to measure it in the short term. And we do have some data systems challenges in the early childhood world that I'll answer questions about if you guys want to go there, but we could spend a lot of time just talking about that. And I want to get through the full presentation if that's okay. And I also just want you to understand what the metrics are, because again, it connects back to how we would propose spending funding for the hubs. So our first goal is an early childhood system that's aligned, coordinated, and family-centered. And so the long-term vision for what this looks like when it's true, when that becomes true, is that we'll see a common vision and agenda for our focused population of children in each community, strong leadership from all five partnering sectors where there's a commonly shared agenda, set of strategies, blended and braided resources, and shared activities. And then ultimately, when you have an early childhood system that's aligned, coordinated, and family-centered, disparities in access to services and supports are reduced, and those supports become more culturally responsive. So that's what we're pushing toward in the long term, over the course of the next 5 years. What you see bulleted out on the slide, which I won't read to you because, gosh, that's a lot of words, are the things that the hubs are going to be responsible for in their contracts to us over the course of the next 2 years. And so you can see that the next 2 years are really about getting those mechanisms for sharing funding, blending and braiding resources, having really clearly articulated partnerships in place around service coordination, moving us to that bigger vision. Our second goal is that children enter school ready to succeed. And for us, you know, 5 years from now, when that becomes really true, this means that children arrive at school with their social, emotional, linguistic, and cognitive skills that will support their later success in school, that their families are supported as their first and most important teachers, that early care and education programs are equipped to promote positive child development, regardless of what kind of setting that program might be in, and that children and families experience aligned instructional practices and seamless transitions from early childhood into kindergarten. And then ultimately, we want to see disparities in outcomes for children of color and low-income children reduced. Those are big goals. Over the next 5 years, seeing that kind of change in consistent attendance at kindergarten and a decrease in disparities between demographic groups on the skills that we measure on the kindergarten assessment, that's going to take us some time. So over the next 2 years, what we'd like to see from the hubs is an increase in developmental screening, an increase in children who are currently on waiting lists for programs being connected to high-quality programs, increase the number of high-quality programs that we're supporting and developing in hotspot areas, and increasing the number of children who are enrolled in kindergarten before the start of the school year, which is something that we don't do a great job of across the state right now and is actually predictive of consistent attendance later.
Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry, can you tell me one more time, QRIS quality?
Yes. Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay. I tried so hard not to speak in acronyms. Co-chairs Comp and Monroe, Representative Smith Warner. The QRIS is the Quality Rating Improvement System, and it's our strategy for working with licensed childcare to really help programs build out their ability to promote positive child development in their programs, whether it's a family home setting or a child care center.
Thank you.
And then our third goal is families that are healthy, stable, and attached. And so again, long term, this looks like families that have support to high quality health services, parents and families that have the confidence, knowledge, and skills to support healthy attachment and positive development of their children, along with the adequate needs, the adequate resources to meet their own needs. So again, big goals. And in the short term, We're focusing on increasing the number of children who are on employment-related daycare, who are connected to a high-quality child care program, increasing the number of families who are DHS clients, who are connected to parenting supports and early childhood programs, and then increasing the number of children on the Oregon Health Plan.
Representative Taylor has a question.
Yep.
Thank you, Chair Senator Monroe. No, that's fine. So can you talk a little bit more about the second bullet and how you learn about whether if a family or a child is receiving services from DHS? I mean, obviously there's all the privacy issues, et cetera. So is this something that you have to just let DHS, wherever the hub is, know that these services are available and people voluntarily come forth, or is there some sort of coordinated effort so that the social workers or whomever are referring people to? You just talk a little bit more about how that works.
Yes, Co-Chairs Compton Monroe and Representative Taylor. This is one where there's still a fair amount of work to do with DHS to figure out a consistent referral mechanism.
Okay.
But in a couple of communities around the state, they've figured it out through local partnerships. The best example that I can think of is in Yamhill County, where all of the folks that work with the population of families that we're talking about get together on a weekly basis through something that they call the Family Core. And they've created a opt-in referral form, so a parent comes in for services from one community service provider and they can opt into having their information shared with everybody who might be able to provide service. Mm-hmm. That team meets once a week to share those referrals and figure out how to get families served. So what the challenge we're really up against here is how do you protect folks' privacy but give them the option to select into other kinds of services?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Tough one. The final piece is just making sure that children that are on the Oregon Health Plan are regularly visiting their primary care home. So the ability for the system to do those things is directly tied to the funds that hubs receive. And as you've heard me say before, this biennium we had $4 million that came out of the former Commission on Children and Families to do this work. We knew that the hubs would need more than just that small amount of base funding to prove their effectiveness. So as we were putting the system together, we also worked to identify other resources that existed within the Early Learning Division to provide them with some support. So in the second year of this biennium, they had access to $641,000 of Great Start funding, which is a former commission funding stream. And again, in the second year of the biennium, had access to $1.8 million in family support funding, another commission funding stream. Most hubs received kindergarten partnership and innovation funds and early literacy funds. And so the total amount that we were able to put together for hubs this biennium was $11.9 million. That includes those former commission funding streams, kindergarten partnership and innovation funds, early literacy, and some race to the top funding that we directed to them for focused child care networks. The governor's requested budget asks for an additional $24 million over current service level for the hubs. And regardless of the funding amount that is ultimately invested in this system, we would allocate the funds to hubs in three ways. One, into some base coordination funding to support the core work that they're responsible for doing, coordinating across systems, family service management. Two, we would allocate it to community funding for school readiness, and then three, to community funding to support projects that work toward that healthy, stable, and attached families goal. The next couple of slides just kind of highlight what some of those coordination activities could look like. We would propose in terms of how to spend the allocation funding. This year they got $50,000 in startup funds. We would propose $100,000 in coordination-based funding for the biennium, plus a per-child allocation based on the percentage of at-risk children in their community, or 6,000 children, whichever is less, because we have some rural communities. The best example I can think of is Harney and Grant County, where the number of at-risk children in their community is 795. And when you're doing population-based funding, that's just actually not enough for them to have the resources to function. And so we set 6,000 children as the base. Co-Chair Monroe, I think Representative Smith has a question.
Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to go back to that slide for a moment, two things. Number one, I just wanted to clarify that the $100,000 per hub will be for the biennium, so it's really still just $50,000 a year, the same as it was before.
Co-chairs Comp and Monroe, Representative Smith Warner, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. And then to review, is $6,000 or students?
Co-chair Sorry. Monroe and co-chair Comp, Representative Smith Warner, that dollar sign is a typo. Okay. It should just be 6,000 children.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you.
Sorry for the confusion on that. And these are just the types of activities that are supported by that base funding. Again, just a deeper look at what we mean by basic hub operations, a deeper look at what we mean by capacity building, and a deeper look at what we mean by family engagement. The second funding stream, again, would go toward community-based projects to support school readiness. These funds would help hubs make progress against the school readiness metrics that we talked about earlier. And again, regardless of the funding amount that's ultimately allocated, these resources would be given to hubs based on the percent of at-risk children in their coverage area. We calculate that percentage based on DHS and OHP client data because that's the only child-level data that exists that's a good proxy for the state's statutory definition of at-risk. Just some examples of how hubs are currently spending money toward achieving their school readiness goals. There's two that I just really love that I want to highlight for you. One of these strategies actually gets toward some of the questions that Representative Springer was asking earlier about how do you find families that are hard to find. Early Learning Multnomah is pursuing a strategy to do just that through something that they're calling the community education worker. It's very similar to community health workers, for those of you who are familiar with that model. Community education workers are respected local community members who have been trained specifically in early learning and development and can offer support and guidance to families with young children. And in this model, they're really doing that through a home-based model as well as kind of play and learn groups. The model is built on the understanding that parenting support from a respected community member that shares an identity with a parent is more effective than support from strangers and big systems. And so this is one way that hub is working to connect parents to the bigger school system before they start school and to kind of build that habit around engagement. We also have out in Eastern Oregon and in the frontier region of the state a couple of summer kindergarten transition programs that are really exciting. I'm going to share detailed data with you on that tomorrow. But out in Eastern Oregon, we have a homegrown, developed by the hub, summer kindergarten transition camp. 92 children participated in it this past summer. All of them were living in poverty. Almost all of them were English language learners. Just that first cohort this year outpaced their peers across the board on the early literacy measures that we look at on the kindergarten assessment. And so that's the kind of thing that hubs can invest in when they are resourced to really work towards school readiness. The Frontier Hub, which is Harney and Grant counties, developed something pretty similar. They're seeing similar results. Their program also has built out an added component of supporting kindergarten teachers to do home visits in the first few months of kindergarten because parents in that community are really used to getting that from their preschool program. And it felt really like an interruption to stop getting that level of support when kindergarten started. So the hub is helping bridge that transition for the parents and the kids. Finally, we'd propose a similar sort of fund for communities to invest in strategies to support healthy, stable, and attached families. Just like the school readiness funds, the hubs would have flexibility to choose how to invest this money. This biennium, the only support that we had to put toward that was existing Title IV-B2 funding, and those grants actually just went out in January, so not a lot of stories to tell about that yet. But we definitely think it's an important component of investing in them.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Megan, how much, I'm going to be blunt, how much money comes from the feds in those Title IV funds?
The Title IV-B2 funding is federal funding, and it's $1.8 million.
And is follow-up, sir?
Go ahead.
And is that something that comes yearly or biannually?
It comes biannually, and it used to go to the Commission on Children and Families. Excuse me, so now it comes to the Early Learning Division, and we use some portion of our Title IV-B2 funding to support the Healthy Families Oregon program, and then we had this other fund, this pot left that used to go to the commission that we just are allocating out to the hubs.
Thank you.
In the first year of the biennium, and even till this is true through today, we used some of the former commission funding to support service continuity in that transition period. But going into the next biennium, that 1.8 is set aside to go toward healthy, stable, and attached families work for the hubs.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And then this is actually my last slide. And it just looks at a couple of funding options. So the governor's requested budget was to add $24 million in new resources. You can see we would propose across the board, if we were able to get new investment, $10 million to go into hub coordination funds. And then you can see how under different scenarios, whether we're funded at the full 24, at 15.4, at current service level, or at no new investment, how we would propose splitting things up. One thing that I want to point out to this committee as you're considering what you want to invest in this system, in order for the hubs to stay at what feels like current service level for them, we need $5.4 million in new resources, again, because of the staging and the way that this system rolled out. If no new investment were made in the early learning hubs, they would experience what would feel like a 50% cut. And I think it would be very hard for the partners who you had sitting up in front of you, who have made a very good faith effort in helping us build this system out, it would be hard for them to make any progress at all. In fact, I think they'd go backwards. At the CSL level, I think we would tread water for the course of this biennium. Once you get up to 15.4 a new resource or at our full request, I think that we can actually start to make significant progress toward the outcomes that we're hoping to see changes in.
Question?
Nope, I'm good.
Questions? Megan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything else for the good of the order, Mr. Wilson?
No, for tomorrow, you'll be looking at some of the more specific funding streams or grant programs that early learning has. So Megan will be back in front of you.
That's right. Tomorrow, we'll talk Kindergarten Partnership and Innovation Fund, preschool, home visiting, and early intervention, early childhood special ed. So you can start to think of your questions now. And I'll be excited to talk to you tomorrow about that.
And we're waiting with bated breath for May 14th. Hopefully we'll have some resources to fund these programs at the appropriate level. Early childhood stuff is so critical. And involvement, programs that involve families are absolutely critical. Without the family involvement, these programs aren't nearly as effective or basically sometimes not effective at all. So that's critical. And we're, as soon as we get that big number on the 14th, Representative Comp and I will be meeting with Lindsay back there and the governor's people and trying to come forth with an appropriate recommendation to the big co-chairs. And then we'll just sort of twist their arms and make sure they say okay. Anything else? Thank you very much. We're adjourned.
Thank you.